The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president begins this week. I'm former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, and this week, legal expert Ricky Kleeman joins me on my podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet. We talk about jury selection, the latest trial developments, and legal strategy.
From the defense point of view, for Donald Trump to be signing checks for Michael Cohen, it would have been something usual, because Michael Cohen was working for the Trumps.
The episode is out now. Search and follow Stay Tuned with Preet wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, it's part two of our UFC Fight Island 5 post-fight coverage kicks off right now. Live with all of you. This is the UFC Fight Island 5 post-fight show here on MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Heck, being joined by the Prince of Positivity himself, who wasn't so positive with his strength of schedule gymnastics scale, which we'll get into in a moment. And of course, E. Casey Lydon joins us as well. AK, let us just start with you. You said that your ceiling for this card was a 6. You compared it to last weekend's UFC Fight Island 4 card. Clearly, this surpassed that. Explain yourself.
My system works. All right, my system works. My assessment of the card was wrong. This I agree with. My assessment of the card was wrong. I definitely scored it probably a little too low. I mean, clearly, it was, I think people are calling it one of the best cards of the year, which is fair. I think it's fair. But I will say, on paper, my degree of difficulty system is a theoretical, hypothetical system. Okay, I did not think this could reach higher than an 8. I didn't think you'd reach higher than a 6, but I think people will agree this disadvantage. If you're scoring on a flat 10-point scale, this was like a 9.5, maybe higher, depending mileage may vary, I guess, with how some of these fights went, but it's like at least a 9.5. We're going by quality fights, highlight reel finishes. It was a really good card. So my usage of the scale was wrong, but I still think on paper, you couldn't have thought this was me higher than a 7 or 8. That's what I think. But it was an amazing, amazing card.
Well, normally, like, a thumbnail will sort of tell the story of the main attraction of the card. And notice that the thumbnail for this particular event was not Corey Sandhagen. It was that man, Joaquin Buckley, who delivered one of the greatest knockouts in UFC history. At least that's what everybody's saying. Definitely, in my opinion, the knockout of the year in 2020 thus far. There is still 3 months to go, so that could change very quickly. We'll get to Joaquin Buckley in a moment, but let us start with the main event, AK. Your hair looks crazy.
It does. I need to get it cut real bad.
Yes. I thought you were talking about me, and I was like,
my hair is rough.
Yes, I have had bad hair days, and what I wouldn't give for another bad hair day. But AK, Corey Sandhagen did exactly what we all predicted. Spinning heel kick finish of Marlon Moraes in the second round. We all predicted this. Mm-hmm. Like, we're all just joking around on the preview show. Like, we knew how this thing was going to end. But, man, oh, man, that was some first round. Both guys landed big shots. Sandhagen was doing some damage to the body. But Moraes just, no matter, you know, what direction he was throwing from, what angle he was throwing from, he found a way to punch Corey Sandhagen in the face at any point. But Sandhagen comes through in a huge way, looked great in the first round, finishes in the second. Your thoughts on the Sandman's big win tonight? And is this the biggest win of his career so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be the biggest win of his career. Look, the Dominic Cruz 2.0 comparisons are there. I guess a lot of, kind of flowy You know, 130 Fires get that comparison. Of course, TJ Dillashaw got a little bit of that. He himself, of course, said he followed. He definitely followed the Dominic Cruz style, and so is Corey Sandhagen. He's done the same thing. But Dominic Cruz never scored a spinning heel kick KO to the head like this one. So he's got that one up on the Dominator. But there was a lot of I want to go to the commentary because I think they did a good job explaining right from the start why Sandhagen was so successful. Was he had to reach a flow state, which I don't know if that's a technical term, but you can kind of see, like, I think anytime you have this high movement, a dependence and a style that's very dependent on being accurate and having great timing, you'll know right from the start whether a guy's in the zone. And boy, Sandhagen, like I said, he was getting hit a little bit, but man, he looked really comfortable. He was throwing from all those kind of unorthodox angles and landing. He was moving beautifully. And then really feeling himself early in the second round. I thought, I loved the call out. I loved him shouting, whether it was to his corner or to someone else or to Moraes himself to kind of throw him off, saying his orbital's broken. Because it is possible that made Moraes have to think a little bit on defense. And that may be why he got caught by that really, really spectacular speeding heel kick right to the top of the dome. So it was a great performance by Sandhagen, the best version of him we've seen, the one that looks like a world title contender, and I think in one performance washes away whatever doubt there was from him getting so clearly beaten by Aljo last time. So really, really well done by the Sandman.
And he proved just how tough he is, how good his chin is, because he did take some big shots in that first round and just ate them all and kept going forward and was able to finish the fight in the second. So, Casey, let me ask you, because me and AK are going to talk matchmaking for about 30 to 45 minutes on Monday morning on to the next one. So there's been a lot of suggestions out there. I have been clamoring for, you know, a Marlon Moraes versus Dominic Cruz fight for quite some time now. Maybe we will get that after all, but Corey Sandhagen calls out Frankie Edgar and he calls out TJ Dillashaw. I think the popular opinion is we do Sandhagen versus Dillashaw and then Aljamain Sterling gets his rightful title shot against Piotr Jan. Do you agree with this or do you have a different direction for the bantamweight division, especially in the top five or six right now?
No, Corey Sandhagen is correct. He caught his shot, and that is the fight to make. I think coming into this, we all said that for Aljamain Sterling, Corey Sandhagen was going to be his favorite fighter tonight. Corey had to win. He had to win emphatically and to make sure that it can only be Jan versus Sterling. And I think that's going to happen. Unless the UFC benches Jan all the way until Dillashaw comes back, which I think is sometime in January, which I hope they don't. But Corey, oh my goodness, if they finally book Jan versus Sterling, and then if they do even have it in January when TJ's back and have Corey versus TJ as the co-main or at least on the pay-per-view portion of the card, just excellent, because it'll just be excellent fight. And yeah, that's the fight to make. And then Cruz versus Edgar. That's the other fight that should be booked. But I'm still kind of sweating. I'm like, because like that was such an exciting night of fights and like just so many good knockouts and things I was just wrong about, but I'm very happy I was wrong about. And it's exciting to watch fights and be excited about it and not feel like sometimes it feels like a chore. And tonight it did not.
Yes. And for Marlon Moraes, he has now lost 2 of 3. He's been finished in 2 of 3. Mm-hmm. And many feel that he lost the Jose Aldo fight as well. So in a weird way, if one judge scored that fight a little differently, Moraes could be on a 3-fight losing streak right now. But, you know, obviously back to the drawing board for him. 135 is just such a fun division. Maybe the best overall in the UFC from top to bottom. So, you know, interesting times right now.
Poor Marlon.
Yes.
Poor Marlon. I'm just going to say it. Look, I know a lot of people felt he lost the Aldo fight, but guess what? On paper, he didn't. He won the fight on the judges' scorecards. He won that fight. And the guy he beats gets a title shot, and now he's so far away when you're on the receiving end of a knockout like that.
And he was booked to fight Jan. He was booked to fight him. Like, they had, it was signed and everything. Right? It was venue and all. He was booked to fight him, and then just, man, what a What a bummer year. What a bummer 2020 for Marlon Moraes has been.
Big time. That's MMA, right? But hey, look, you know what? People could say he should have taken care of business against Henry Cejudo. Maybe he should have had a more definitive finish. Like, there's things you can say.
So people are going to say, he should have just won every fight. What's the big deal? Just win. Really,
yeah. Anytime a fighter complains about anything, I just go like, yeah, but why didn't you just win all your fights?
Why didn't you just win? Yeah.
Geez. Yeah. And then really, there's no counter to that. So. But no, I do. Like I said, I'm sure that, you know, there's things Marlon could have done to not be in the position, but I think he did a lot to put himself in a position for a second title shot and wasn't given it. So that's I do feel sympathy for him. But really, again, congratulations to Sandhagen, because that performance tonight was amazing.
Absolutely. And big win for Edson Barboza. Gets his first win at 145 pounds. He looked fantastic. And we all said that this could be sort of that showcase fight for him at 145 pounds with a matchup like Makwan Amerikani. And Amerikani, just kind of like Sandhagen was in that first round, super tough. He gets dropped a couple different times, but hung in there, went the full 15 with Edson Barboza Jr. It was a great performance. He wants a top five, top six guy. Does he get it, Casey Lydon? Do you think he gets a top five, top six guy? Someone threw it out there. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, someone threw it out maybe in the other in the post-fight presser that Barboza versus Calvin Kattar. I don't think that's necessarily where we go here. I think Barboza probably needs another win or two to be put into that category, because Cater's like the next guy to break through. He's probably a win or two away from getting up to a title shot. He's on a nice streak right now. But do you think a top five, top six guy is coming Barboza's way, or do you think he's going to have to win another one before he gets there?
I thought he beat Ige. I don't remember if I thought he beat Felder, but I remember it was extremely close and it could have gone either way. Okay, real quick on Edson Barboza, you brought this up. His strength of schedule is insane. And I would like to point out, if we want to say Edson Barboza's back or whatever, to me, he was never gone. Because Makwan, I mean, I think I'm going to go ahead and go to when he fought Evan Dunham in July of 2014. That's the last time I felt he fought a guy that was ranked as far down as Makwan is. And Makwan's obviously a very talented featherweight, but he's not a ranked featherweight. I won't call him an A-level featherweight. So Edson's like, this is the lowest competition that Edson has had in what, 6 years, and he steamrolled Makwan. And so to me, Edson on the right day, I think we felt this for a while. On the right day, he can win. I don't know if he can win the title, but he's obviously competitive against anyone at the top right now. And actually, I'm not against the Kattar fight, but you probably have to throw a couple more names out there. But absolutely, Edson is a premier A-level featherweight, and I'm very excited to see him fight again.
Maybe my answer will change on Monday morning, but I mean, I think you just have to go back to the Sadiq Youssef well and run that fight. I think that's the reason Youssef couldn't make it to Fight Island was a passport issue. So it wasn't an injury or anything like that. It was a simple thing like that. And Barboza wants to get back quickly. Youssef obviously wants to get in there and fight. I think this is the natural progression. It's a ranked opponent.
For quick turnaround, there you go. For quick turnaround, that makes a lot of sense because they can both fight in the States. I'm assuming Edson doesn't have issues fighting in the States since he lives here. So even though he's a Brazilian citizen, I'm pretty sure that's not an issue. So I would love to see that.
What did you think, AK, of Barboza's performance tonight? I thought he looked fantastic.
First of all, look, if I had told you there would be four or five highlight reel knockouts on this card, and Edson Barboza was not one of them, you'd think I was crazy. So it's kind of amazing that we had all these amazing finishes, two spinning kick finishes, and one of them was not Edson Barboza. But yeah, he looked great in there. It was real tough for Amerikani, because I think a lot of us, the storyline going in was, this is the biggest fight of Amerikani's career. Like we said, a guy we always know has been talented, great with the media, just looks like a star, but you look at the resume and he's got some okay wins on there, but just no big name. So this was his chance and a good matchup if he could get to the ground. Unfortunately, he found out very early in the fight that getting Barboza to the ground is not easy. Getting even close to him is not easy without eating like a savage leg kick or one of those rib crushing body kicks or a lightning fast jab to the face. Like, getting close to him is just the prospect is scary. And then Amir Khani also opportunity before going in. He's probably not going to beat him in the stand-up. So that's why there's a lot of inactivity on Amir Khani's side. I'm sure there's a lot of people saying, why isn't he doing anything? And I just want people to imagine being in there. And within the first 60 seconds, the first 2 minutes, realizing, holy crap, I have no way of initiating offense against this guy. And then imagining you have to be in that cage with that person for another 13 minutes. Okay, so before anyone criticizes Amir Khani, you know, maybe it wasn't a great performance. But that's what you're dealing with when you fight a guy on the level of Edson Barboza and you find out firsthand how outclassed you are. So really credit to Barboza for proving what he is. Like we said, a top 10 lightweight for years. Now maybe a top 10 featherweight already, even though he's only two fights in. Future matchups. I know that we think this guy's going to be matched up with Zabit at some point, even though the fight keeps falling through. But man, why not Barboza and Yair? If that Magomed Sharipov fight never comes around, which I'm pretty confident it will. But if it doesn't, Yair Rodriguez and Edson Barboza.
Be fun. I don't know if it's kind of like you meet the love of your life, but she wants to be single for a little while. Like maybe you're Mr. Right, but just not Mr. Right now. I think that's kind of where I see that fight. But we'll talk more about that, obviously, on Monday. Obviously, the heavyweights had a heavyweight fight. It was great. Martin Tybura defeats Ben Rothwell. It was everything we hoped for. And it was fun. It was a fun heavyweight matchup. Like, I think we're kind of at a point where we just love Ben Rothwell. We hoped those two guys would go in there and have a 15-minute war. But in the back of our minds, we're like, oh, this has the potential to be kind of a snoozer. But it was fun. It was a fun fight. Tybura gets the win.
I thought the placement in the card was great for that heavyweight fight, too. I felt like we needed a bit of a slowdown, but still a good fight. And I felt like, good job, matchmakers. Because I was complaining a lot last week with the, DeCastro and Felipe? Was it?
Yeah.
The co-main event. Yeah. I was like, ugh. But this was perfect. This was good. So
a sweet spot.
Yeah,
and it was a fun fight. And man, I got to give so much credit to Tybura for not getting dragged into a dogfight, because if that was Rothwell's plan, it really wasn't a bad plan, because he came. I mean, Ben Rothwell can be pretty unpredictable, but I did not think he would come out high volume. I did not think that would be the plan. I thought he'd maybe want to use some of his grappling, maybe try and submit at some point. But he came out just Diego Sanchez, just straight punching at Tybura, and Tybura. Just look, I'm going to get my defenses up. I'm going to let you kind of tire, slow down a bit, and I'm going to counter. It's not the sexiest strategy. It might look like my opponent's doing more, but you know, he trusted that the judges would see he was the more effective striker. I think in both rounds 2 and 3, at least the on-screen stats, I haven't seen the official ones yet. Tybura did outstrike him. It was only in the first that Rothwell had a pretty decent lead in strikes. But again, how much of those did a lot of damage, I don't know. I think Tybura was really smart. I think he knew what he could take, and he just fought a great fight, and then went to his grappling in the third and sealed the deal. So very solid performance for the veteran.
Absolutely.
And then before that, Dreykus du Plessis with a left hook finish of Marcus Perez. And I have to say, we're going to get into, you know, the man who deserved the bonus the most in a matter of moments. I thought du Plessis got the big fat hose job on the bonuses. I'm not going to lie. Like, I feel like if we're talking like strength of competition and, you know, I mean, Marcus Perez, that was the first time he'd been finished in his entire career. And du Plessis took the fight on 2 weeks' notice and got the finish. I thought he should have got the bonus tonight over Tom Breeze. Like, I think the matchup for du Plessis was a tougher matchup. No disrespect to KB Bular, who's obviously a fun prospect, but look at the guys that KB beat on the way up to the UFC. Nothing like Marcus Perez has stepped into the octagon with. So I kind of thought he got the hose job. Christakis got a bonus. I thought he deserved a bonus.
And that was a super cool knockout too. That hook. Was Marcus like, was he falling over or getting up at the time?
He was trying to throw a Yair-esque like back elbow.
Uh-huh.
Thing. Yeah, that's gonna look lovely on that little boxing screen. I can see it on YouTube now. Back elbow thing. So if you watch the replay, yeah, that's clearly the issue. And that's not uncharacteristic of Perez. Perez is mostly a grappler, but when he's on the feet, he loves to just throw wild stuff. So that was in there, and he just straight up turned his back to him and just lingered there for like a half second too long, and then boom, du Plessis snuck in that beautiful left hand shot.
Yeah, I just want to point that out. It was a very creative, super cool knockout.
He should have got a bonus. He got screwed. Agreed. In my opinion. Tom Breeze, good win though. No, not taking anything away from you. Maybe we give a fifth bonus, but Christakis, nice win. First man to defeat and or finish. Rodrigo Nascimento, yeah. And then Joaquin Buckley. I mean, my God, the star of the show, the star of the night, the star of the year when it came to finishes. AK, you are, I think you are higher on Joaquin Buckley than anybody. I don't know if you picked him to win.
Casey
tonight.
Was too.
Oh.
Casey actually picked him to win.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
In terms of just like being excited to watch a fighter compete, I think Joaquin Buckley is like one of those guys that is on the top of your list. I don't know if he's in the position of some of the fighters that you like to watch and that you favor and you speak about all the time and on the various programs here, but he might be getting up there, especially after that knockout. Let me just ask you this. Knockout of the year, I think it's definitely there right now. If not, it's top two or three, but there are people saying that this is the greatest knockout in UFC history. Is this in the conversation for that? Do we feel like it's there?
Yeah, I mean, even taking into account, obviously, recency bias, you know, take this a grain of salt. It has to be in the top five I've ever seen. I just never seen anything like it. And it's one of those, I saw a lot of people saying this on social media. It's one of those clips, and thank goodness the UFC put this clip out there. Twice, I think they put it the original and then a couple of other different angles. This is the kind you show to people who just a passing interest in sports or a passing interest in anything, in action movies, you would show them this clip, right? This is the definition of a viral KO. We put it on our own account. The activity was crazy.
Over 1,000 retweets. Yeah.
I think the UFC said it was the most retweeted, I think most liked. They said this on the broadcast. I think the most interacted with tweet in their history. So this is a bigger, you know, this is a bigger than just MMA highlight. This is a all-time possibly great sports highlight. Again, we could be seeing on those wacky world of sports highlight shows like 50 years from now.
Or Faces of Death video, you know, one of those.
Oh, that's old school. Yeah, back of the rental store.
Blockbuster.
Behind the curtain, yeah. That's where you normally see this knock.
Where the old UFC videos used to be.
Yeah. There's people who are so much younger than us that have no idea.
Blockbuster video. What is this? Yeah,
it was such a cool KO. I think some people are saying it has like, you know, roots in Taekwondo, something you might see in Taekwondo competition, which sounds right. But definitely not the kind of strike you would see someone attempt in an actual fight. People can say Kasangan, I made a mistake, but he didn't hold on to the leg that long. It was like maybe a half second longer than they should have, but he was letting go as Buckley was getting this wild torque and just spinning and kicking him right in the jaw. The color went out of Kasanganai's face. The way he fell back was incredible. It's just everything.
Roll. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez. He woke up as soon as he hit the ground, which is, I guess, good to see, but also kind of scary because, you know, he bumped his head and later posts on Instagram, you know, some positive message. So thankfully Kasanganai not hurt too badly. And I'm sorry, I know I'm ranting here, but I will say we talked about all these great finishes and how much it sucks that some people got snubbed. Get rid of performance bonus in general are a little silly, but get rid of the four bonus limit then. Why is there a four bonus limit? The UFC is like a billion-dollar company now? This bonus limit is absurd. I'm not saying reward every finish, but I'd say almost with only a few exceptions, just reward people for getting knockout submissions. Don't you want to encourage knockout submissions? So bizarre. So, yeah, I mean, congrats to people who got it, but more bonuses should be handed out, and hopefully they do that secret, you know, locker room discretionary bonuses they're always talking about.
The only way that Duplessis wouldn't have got hosed is if you gave Joaquin Buckley all four bonuses. Like, it was kind of like the 30 years of Jericho when like they did the credits and all the names are Chris Jericho. Like, give all the bonuses to Joaquin Buckley and I would have been okay with that.
I'm glad you brought up pro wrestling, Mike, because I feel like, I mean, honestly, this KO, it was so spectacular. I think it was a little staged. I think this is they called a high spot in wrestling, hoping that they would get fight of the night and knockout of the night, and then they take $50,000 each. All right, I've been watching pro wrestling for a long time. I know a high spot when I see one. All right, this is like a Young Bucks super kick thing or something. Like, I don't know. Now I'm a little fishy, but no, I'm kidding. It was just once in a lifetime knockout. You got to be good to be lucky. You got to be lucky to be good. It was so awesome.
Tony Kelly gets a win. Giga Chikadze, big win over Omar Morales. Tracy Cortez defeats Stephanie Egger. And then Tagir Ulambakov defeats Bruno Silva. That was a really terrific fight.
That was an excellent fight.
Any other night, fight of the night.
Yeah, but that was like yesterday I saw that fight. And I remember watching it. This is like one of the best curtain jerkers I've seen all year.
Very solid.
All right, Casey, this is an excellent question. And it's a funny one for me, too. And I'll explain momentarily. Which spinning knockout was better? Is it tonight by Joaquin Buckley against Impa Kasanganai or Edson Barboza against Terry Edom back in 2012? And I have a little brother. He's 4 years younger than me. when Terry Adam was like making his way up in the UFC, he is like my little brother's twin, like tall, skinny, same face. Like, so when I saw Edson Barboza knock out Terry Adam in that emphatic fashion, it was like almost seeing like my little brother getting spinning head kicked like that. So just that's my little interesting story on that. Casey, let me ask you, what was the better knockout? Was it Barboza? Because that one's etched in history. That's a Bob O'Reilly KO. Joaquin Buckley's obviously going to be there at some point. Which one was better?
Well, the Terry Adam knockout was so amazing. I mean, as much as I want to give Barboza credit, you got to give just as much credit to Mr. Adam, because the way he fell back, that whole stiff, you know, just straight back, just couldn't be topped. And that's what made the, how do you say it? Kasagana. Yeah, that he deserves all the credit too, because the way he went down, the eyes rolling back. But I got to go Buckley for the better knockout, mostly because it was a better fight. If you remember the Barboza-Edom fight, I think that happened in the third round. And the first two rounds were kind of, it was just, and then the knockout just kind of came out of nowhere. Buckley, Kasagana was just, it was just great. Man, that first round, like, it was just a great fight. So it all kind of built up and it made sense. So Buckley, you got it.
Maybe, like, I think I need to let this one stew for a little while before I can answer that question, because this sport, like, we see something right away and we're like, yep, that's the one. So maybe I have to watch the other one again. And but like, if you're asking me right this second, it's definitely Buckley. Like, it's definitely Buckley. But if I go back and watch the other fight, maybe it'll change. Now, AK, what do you think?
Yeah, this is like what's the best Taylor Swift album? It's like, yeah, the last one I listened to, obviously. Whichever one's the most recent one that came out is obviously the best one. And then you just go back in order. Unless you listen to another one out of order, and then your mind's garbled. Oh, wait, what were we talking? Oh, yeah, sorry. Edson Barboza versus Terry Adam, you may lay down your crown. We have a new greatest spinning knockout in MMA history. It is Joaquin Buckley versus Impa Kasanganai. This was, this was jazz, baby. I mean, this is jazz, baby. Can we get the jazz flute in here, Casey? If you loved Barboza Adam because of just like, I mean, just how methodical Barboza is in sort of setting these things up, this was just improvisation on Buckley's part. I mean, when we saw in the fight with Holland, like some potential for that, and if anyone's seen any of his sort of pre-UFC knockouts, some stuff he did in the LFA, like he's some creativity there, some wildness, some raw power. And we saw something on the Holland fight, but I mean, a fight that he didn't have a lot of time to prepare for. This was, I mean, you do not plan to give someone a spinning kick off of your leg getting caught. You just don't do that. Why would you? You end up falling on your butt like Ben Rothwell did later in the evening.
But that was awesome.
Buckley, I'm sure in the moment, again, I didn't even think. I have to watch the post-fight. He did joke on it. It was Wakanda style knockout or something like that. So maybe he does this more often than we think. But for me, it was just this beautiful in the moment thing. And boy, I would love to. I don't know if he'll ever be able to replicate that in practice or in any other situation again. And it doesn't matter, because he did it when it matters most. Matter having in the cage for everyone to see, and it's on, it's recorded, and now immortalized and part of the UFC intros and whatever pilot will practice forever. Damn.
I want to see if this is going to be in the Bob O'Reilly montage next week.
It better be.
Yeah, like they're already putting it in there. Yeah.
I will tell you a little peek behind the curtain. Like 90 seconds after that knockout happens, I get a private message on our Slack channel from AK Lee, who says, quote, "We're matchmaking for Buckley. I don't give an F." like we're match for on to the next one. Buckley makes it, because normally we have a pretty, you know, formulaic thing way that we do the show. Main card, main event, winner and loser, rest of the main card, and then we pick a wild card, maybe the featured prelim if it's a big one. But AK said, nope, we're throwing the rules out the window. Buckley's not a wild card. Buckley is a guy that we're gonna match make for. So I'm here to tell you right now, AK, we're going with your suggestion.
You're darn right. If I had to choose between matchmaking for Joaquin Buckley and matchmaking for Martin Tibora, all respect to Martin Tibora, I'm going with Buckley after tonight. I'm sorry. I sent out a reader call for Tibora. So there you go. Readers, check out our Twitter account. You guys can have, or just tweet us. You can have your voice. If you've got hot Martin Tibora matchups you're just dying to talk about, please let us. Yeah, spicy Martin Tibora matchups. Please let us know. All right, we'll see you on the show.
I feel like this is one of those cards that we can matchmake like a lot of winners from this card against each other. Like, I feel like that's very possible. But we'll see.
Before we leave Buckley, though, I want to we were comparing it to the Edson knockout. Okay, and this, no one has the answer for this. I'm sure Buckley has an answer, but is Buckley going to have the staying power in the UFC that Edson Barboza has?
Don't know.
We shall see.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's going to decide if this knockout will be considered one of the greatest knockouts. Because maybe this is like the first knockout to lead to many more great showings and stuff. So, or is it just a random flash in the pan? We'll see.
It's true. I mean, look at Uriah Hall. Uriah Hall, it has had lasting power in the UFC. But if you ask a lot of people, maybe the Musasi knockout is probably the one, biggest one he actually had in the cage. But before that, people still just talk about his knockout of Adam Sella on Ultimate Fighter, right? That highlight was so long ago. Again, he's proven to be a legitimate middleweight, but you never know. That could have been the beginning of nothing for him. But he has proven outstanding power. We'll see if Buckley it goes out the same way. So.
Yeah, I kind of want to see them. I don't want them to like rush him too much.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, don't be throwing him anything crazy at this point. Let's just slow our rolls. Let's put him in there in fun fights, kind of like we've seen the last two. Do that. Like, we don't need to throw him up against a top 25 guy right now. Like, just keep slowly building him up, and then eventually he could get there. Let's see him do these insane fights. Let's just see these fight of the night kind of battles over and over again, and just throw everything with vigor and power and just violent intentions. I love it. I want to see him again. I'm on the AK Joaquin Buckley bandwagon right now.
Two for two so far in my books. That Holland fight was, I don't remember if they won fight of the night, but that fight, Holland won performance night. Fight with Kevin Holland was super, super exciting.
That could have been a fight of the night for sure.
Yeah.
All right. What else we got for questions? Let's go to the peeps.
Are we ready for questions? Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
let's go up this one real quick.
Do we think Dana signed John versus Sterling? I think they have to now. I think Marlon Moraes was like the piece in the puzzle that didn't quite fit yet, but would kind of shrink down to fit in that size and that place, depending on how tonight went. And Corey Sandhagen, the man who probably couldn't earn a title shot tonight, finished him in the second round. So I think this opens the door. Now, we've talked about, there is the TJ Dillashaw factor in there. Who knows where he goes? I think that the right thing to do would be to do Sandhagen versus Dillashaw. Winner gets the winner of Jan versus Aljamain Sterling. But this is the UFC. There is a lot of heat with TJ Dillashaw. When you hear TJ Dillashaw's name, there's not a lot of love for Killashaw Dillashaw. So he could be the perfect heel to Piotr Jan's babyface. But I think we should do things fairly and based on meritocracy. AK, when is TJ Dillashaw coming back? Is the other question. His suspension is supposedly up in January, so he could fight anytime after that. So we could book him right at the beginning of the year. We could do. I think you put both of those fights on the January pay-per-view card. Done and done.
Yeah. Look, I think we've laid it out. Okay. I mean, I think we've laid it out earlier in the show. I think Casey did, but I mean, I'll just repeat it because our own. You know, I'm loath to give Jose Youngs any credit, but he laid it out pretty clearly in a tweet. Okay, you got to go Jan versus Sterling, Sandhagen versus Dillashaw in January, Cruz versus Edgar. Moraes, and then Moraes can fight Pedro Munhoz. They're both coming off losses. And then he also threw in a little extra with Jose Aldo versus Uriah Faber too, which, as long as both guys are active, I feel like it's a fight you should book at some point. But it's going to come down, though. We keep saying anything besides Sterling Jan makes no sense, but we all know it comes down to contracts. So I don't know how the negotiations are going between Sterling and the UFC and Jan and the UFC. I don't know how ugly it's going to get. We haven't seen anything too bad so far, but it's just we're kind of reading between the lines here with Sterling. You know, Sterling's very vocal on social media. Dana White not being particularly vocal about Sterling getting the title shot. It's very frustrating. So, but even Sandhagen post fight was like, he was talking about as if the fight had already been booked, because he said, give me the winner of that fight. Because the only other options are, what he said, Frankie Edgar, And what was the other? Oh, Dominic Cruz or something like that, right?
Remember, yeah, I mean, it's at least 5 years ago, but remember Sterling, when he was a free agent or he fought out his contract, I don't remember the details, it was a while back now, but there was a lot of negotiations, even re-signing Sterling. I mean, there was a lot of talk of him going to Bellator and stuff at the time. This is about five years ago or so. So this isn't unfamiliar territory for Sterling and as far as contract stuff. And I think at this point we have to assume it's a money thing. It has nothing to do with is Sterling the guy, because we know that. It has to do with money and contracts, so.
Yeah, it sucks to say, but it is the reality of the situation. That fight has to happen. Again, anything else happening, I think the Dillashaw thing would be a travesty. I think I've said this on other shows, so I don't repeat too much, but is it possible it could happen? Of course it's possible it could happen. Should it happen? Hell no, it should not happen. I'll doing our jobs here. I'll cover it with biting my tongue. But I'll say now, I don't approve of that matchup at all. I'll be happy watching it, I guess, once it's happening in the cage. But as far as deserves, the worst word, one of the most useless words in MMA, it's Aljo all the way. And I'll be writing a little bit more about this whole situation for a column tomorrow. But I think Corey Sandhagen did the UFC a favor and painted a very, very clear picture for what needs to be done, people. So don't overthink this. Get that. Make these people whole, all right? Make that money right, and let's see these things happen.
Agreed.
Did you gentlemen get to watch MVP's fight?
I did not.
Did not?
I watched the second half of it.
Oh, okay. Just because we got to talk about a little bit about MVP. That was the debut of a major promotion in Paris, France. But
But here's the thing. I would not call Ross Houston a jobber.
Yeah,
Ross
absolutely not.
Not a jobber.
Not a jobber at all.
Absolutely no way. Was it the most aesthetically pleasing fight to watch? Absolutely not. It was not a good fight.
But
we're past the Michael Venom Page prospect phase. Like we're way beyond that. We're like 3 years beyond that. Enough is enough. Ross Houston, not a jobber. Stylistically, it's a tough matchup for Michael Venom Page. And you could tell that he had a lot of respect for Ross Houston in that fight. And that's why the game plan and the way that the second and third rounds went were based on the first round. There's a lot of respect there. Michael Venom Page is not an idiot. He knows that Ross Houston is a tough out, and this is a tough matchup. And I think a lot of fans, especially from the European scene, thought, oh boy, this guy could give MVP some fits. And in the first round, he certainly did. So, I mean, listen, not every fight is going to be a knockdown, dragout affair. Like Israel Adesanya fought Yoel Romero, and people thought he was like a boring fighter after that. And then look what happened. He goes out there and starches Paulo Costa. And let's not forget the Lima fight. MVP looked pretty damn good in that fight until he got knocked out. So, I mean, it's time to like throw him in these big fights now. Like if he's going to chase Douglas Lima and we're going to play that game, like you have to put him in a position to fight guys that will get him there. Cause I actually want to see the rematch. I want to see what that'll look like down the road. Of course, Lima's going to fight Gegard Mousasi for the 185-pound title, but I think MVP's right there. Maybe give him one more and give him that fight with Lima and see where he's really at. I mean, he's 32 years old. Let's, shit or get off the pot. Let's just throw him to the wolves. Let's just throw him the toughest competition we can do.
Yeah,
it's unfortunate that he took such a huge step back from the Lima fight, because it was kind of getting okay there. Like David Rickles, I think, is a very tough veteran. And then that led to the Paul Daly fight, which everyone wanted forever. That fight, unfortunately, proved to be a stink bomb. Not, by the way, through any fault of MVP. If we all remember, Paul Daly suddenly turned into like the second coming of GSP and tried to initiate a lot of the wrestling. MVP didn't like press the action that much either, but it was an awful fight. But Paul Daly had a lot to do with that after like years of saying like, oh, I wish people would just stick up, stand up like men. And then he showed off his very, very subpar wrestling and lost the fight. So it looked okay there. David Rickles, Paul Daly, Douglas Lima, there you go. It suddenly looks like, oh, Bellator is matching this guy up with the level of hype that we've built him up to. And then Richard Keeley, a fight with Derek Anderson falls through, so he gets another relative unknown in Gianni Melillo. Shinsho Anzai, not the most exciting name. So it was such a huge step back from Lima, which makes it even more frustrating than if they had just kept, if they had never matched him up with these quality Bellator names, because now it's so confusing as to what they're doing with him. Again, Ross Houston, again, maybe not the most well-known guy, but a very tough person. Hopefully, and I think better than the competition he'd been facing before that. So hopefully this is the direction he's trending back upwards again. But I absolutely understand the frustration that I think Al Mack is expressing here.
Yeah,
I mean, what do you do? Well, do you wait? Like at this point, do you wait for Lima Musasi and then just have MVP in the wait? Like if Musasi wins, Lima's still the 175 champion. Do you just immediately give him MVP? Or, I mean, we're at this point now where like you have to give him the scary matchups. Like, do you throw him in there with like a Neiman Gracie? I mean, what else can you do? Like Neiman Gracie just retired John Fitch. He's in that conversation too.
Where is Lorenz Larkin? Why have they not fought?
That's the fight.
That's the fight. That's the fight
for a year and a half.
Yeah, I mean that's all. Like, that absolutely is the fight. If you beat Lorenz Larkin, when he left the UFC, he was a top 10 welterweight. Like people just kind of forget about these guys, you know. But actually, I want to blame Bellator on the fact that the fans are even saying that Houston is a jobber, because Houston is not one, but Bellator, I feel, did not do a proper enough job selling the casual fan who Houston was, because he is quote unquote UFC caliber easily. He's just not in the UFC.
Sure.
So, and I want to say too, I thought MVP actually looked good tonight. This morning or whatever you want to call it. I thought Houston was just way too conservative, and I thought MVP looked good on the ground too. He actually won the grappling exchanges in the third round. So, I called MVP. I like to call Michael Van Page Anderson Silva light, in the sense that you get amazing highlight reels, but you kind of, when you think of Anderson Silva fights, you forget all the bad fights Anderson Silva has, like the Taddeus Aches fights, the Patrick Cote fights, the Damian Maia fights. Anderson Silva's had a lot of stinkers as far as entertainment value, the fights that he won. So that's why like. MVP is Anderson Silva light.
Yeah, I sort of see the comparison. Again, I think obviously the overall level of competition is so different, but I get what you're saying.
He looks great in highlight reels, you know.
Yes, as did the great spot. I was just trying to figure out where Lorenz Larkin has been. I know he did interviews. I think as recently as like May. I think he was doing some press when Bellator, when people were whatever they were hosting some sort of event. But other than that, I don't know why. I don't know why he hasn't been booked. The Larkin thing has certainly the MVP thing has certainly been brought up to him, and I guess he's amenable towards it. And I think they've said maybe for an interim title, if depending how long Lima's away. I guess if he wins the 185, they were assuming. I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts there. But yeah, I think a fight with Larkin makes the most sense. So I'm sure that'll happen at some point.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I interviewed him after the Koreshkov win, and you know, they're both managed by the same company, so there's was like a little bit of hesitation on that sense, but then the Nakamura win was just so ridiculous. Like Larkin looked outstanding in that fight. It was like one of his best performances of his career. And then we're just like, all right. And then MVP had like a sick performance on that card too. Like, let's just match these guys up. Like, what are we waiting for? Like, that's the fight to make. There's no other fight to make. So there you go. There's your MVP talk.
There we go.
Raymond Daniels.
Oh,
coming off of that. It was a no contest or DQ?
It was a no contest.
Yeah.
And I thought he really won, if we think. I mean, who kicked who in the balls?
Who won? Who showed up for the post-fight interview? So
yeah, that's true.
I mean, he's talked about fighting MVP. I think they're friends, though. But I think like in a friendly way, I think he wants to fight him. Yeah. So
yeah. I think MVP needs – I mean, I think Raymond Daniels needs one more legitimate victory. But yeah,
that's more legitimate than that, buddy. I tell you,
you're right. That wins on the streets every day.
You're fighting in for a long time. I tell you that.
That was a great Friday night cover on the sport. Did Edson save his UFC job by beating Makwan Amerikani? Entering today, he's lost 5 of his last 6 fights. It's funny because we talked about this multiple times. I think mostly on the weigh-in show, we touched on it. Look at who Edson Barboza has fought in those 6 fights. It's ridiculous. Like his strength of schedule is amongst the toughest, like in the sport right now. It's insane. And I thought he won the Danny Gay fight, and he clearly won tonight. Like, it's just, no, I don't think he saved his job. I think he was fine. Like
he was fine.
There's no chance he was saving his job. I mean, they threw him in a co-main event fight. It was supposed to fight Sadiq Youssef in an interesting matchup. Then he gets Makwan. It's still the co-main event. So obviously the UFC is still invested in this guy as a 145 pounder. And I think, I don't know if I'm accurate 100% on this, but I think Dana White even scored that fight for Edson Barboza against Danny Ige. So most people thought Barboza won that fight. I don't think his job was on the line. That never even crossed my mind until I saw this question.
You're talking about his resume. I'm just looking back to see when was the last time he had a quote unquote easy fight. And by the way, there's really no easy fights in the UFC. At least, especially not.
I said 2014.
You said, yeah. Evan Dunham?
Evan Dunham. That's as far back.
But wasn't Evan Dunham in the top 15, though? They didn't have rankings. They didn't have rankings back then. But
Rankings now?
I mean, they have them. Do they matter? Evan Dunham at the time. Oh, okay. He was a little bit of a slump. But I mean, Evan Dunham also was a guy who only fought kind of high-level competition. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't even call Dunham. And then before that, Donald Cerrone. I think you had to go back December 2013. Danny Castillo. And Danny Castillo, stylistically, was a tough matchup for him. So, man, this guy, you're right. I mean, you went out having some of the toughest res. This guy, when they will look back on it, will go down as having one of the toughest resumes at 155 pounds. So, and exactly. He could be on a 3-fight win streak right now. Definitely wasn't fighting for his job. So well-liked by the company. Go ahead, Kate.
Can I make a weird comparison?
You already have one tonight.
I thought we had two. You told me two earlier. I'll show them that.
Go ahead.
I understand what Joseph Boza is saying. I don't agree with it at all. But let's compare Edson Barboza to, say, a John Dodson. John Dodson had an incredibly tough strength of schedule too, and he got cut from the UFC after losing to Dvalishvili. That's how you say his name. So what I mean is, so Edson, in a sense, when you lose, if the price tag was too high for Edson, or the fan interest wasn't there for Edson, which I still believe it is, unlike it was for Dodson. I felt like the fans just kind of didn't care about Dodson. That's why their UFC released him. It wasn't because Dodson is a crappy fighter or that he was like way past his prime. I mean, he just knocked out Nathaniel Wood. You know, talking about Dodson, and he lost a competitive but decision fight to Mahab. Oh God, I gotta pronounce
it. Mahab.
I do believe maybe payroll-wise, Barboza was on the chopping block in a sense, payroll-wise. But as far as fan interest and just if he's still a top fighter, no, that's just ridiculous.
Now, I will say, what about his own interest if he had lost another fight? If he had technically lost 3 straight fights, six of seven if he'd lost to Amir Khani. He's 34, 34 years old. He turned 34 this year. He'll be 35 in January, so not too long from now, and he has a lot of mileage on him. I'm not saying he would have retired on the spot. I wonder how much that would have hurt his motivation for the future, for the near future, if he had lost another fight. So in that sense, did he save his job? Then I'd say, yeah, maybe he did. So his motivation to keep doing it.
All right, there you go. I mean, just look at this. From 2015 on, Michael Johnson, this is like the streaking.
This is insane.
Almost title shot Michael Johnson, right? Paul Felder wins that fight. Then he fights Tony Ferguson. Loses by dark choke of the second round.
One of the fights of the year.
Pettis. Yes. Beats Anthony Pettis. This is 2016 Anthony Pettis.
Yeah, prime
Pettis. Gilbert Melendez, like 3 months later. Then he knocks out Benil Dariush with a flying knee. Then he fights Khabib. Then he fights Kevin Lee, who had the best performance of his entire career on that fight.
And he came very close to beating Lee.
Yes. He almost finished in the first round of that fight. Dan Hooker, who he beat the brakes off of.
Dominates.
And then he fights Justin Gaethje.
Which he loses.
Paul Felder again. And a lot of people think he beat Paul Felder. Then he fights Dan Ige. Most people think he won that fight. And then he fights Makwan Amerikani. I mean, the strength of schedule for this guy has been ridiculous. So maybe, like, I agree with AK when he says that maybe in his own mind he was fighting for his job, but in terms of like how the UFC views him, putting him in a co-main event like this, I mean, I know this wasn't the deepest card of all time, but they like to throw the heavyweights in there in the co-main event. They said, nope, we're putting the featherweights up there. So I didn't think so.
Hey, and props for Amir Khani for taking that challenge too. That was a bold
demanding
challenge.
Demanding it.
Yeah.
I wanted this fight. It's like, I've never heard anyone say that about Edson Barboza before.
He's a tough dude. He took some big shots in that fight. What else we got?
What do we got, Casey?
What we got? Hold on.
The people are speaking. We've got people watching on a relatively early Saturday night for us. not for those in Abu Dhabi, unfortunately, and our Jose Youngs hopefully getting a chance to crawl somewhere and find some sleep.
I think this is just go back to Edson right here.
What can the UFC do to help catapult Edson to a title shot before he ages out? Well, I mean, you have him fight. Unfortunately, he's going to have to fight. I mean, unfortunately, featherweight is a very exciting division, and it's much more loaded than some people even give it credit for. I mean, there's some surging up and coming 45ers. I know he wants a top five, top six. I just don't think you could justify it right now, because even though people think he beat Dan Ige on paper, just like the Marais Aldo fight that we talked about earlier, he lost that fight. Like, it goes down as a loss. But there's still fun matchups. I mean, Edson Barboza versus Shane Burgos would be a ridiculous fight. That's a ridiculous fight. Burgos is ranked number 10, I believe.
Mike Jonathan Ram is asking what gets him closer to a title shot. Shane Burgos?
Dude, you're not going to put him up there. He doesn't. He's not fighting Max Holloway.
I said, yeah, he's not fighting. Yeah, if that Zabit fight doesn't happen.
Who will Max Holloway fight?
Calvin Kattar.
Is that the fight? That's not booked, right? That's just the fight to make.
That's the fight to make. Unless, if Zabit Yair doesn't happen, which it should happen.
Oh, I know the fight.
Then you do Kattar versus Yair. Okay? That's the fight to make.
Barboza, Josh Emmett.
Yeah. Is Josh Emmett booked? I was just looking at his name. Is he not booked? Does he really not have an opponent lined up?
No, because he tore his ACL in his last fight.
So he's out for a while?
Fought Burgos and tore his ACL in the fight. So
that wasn't that long ago.
He seems to be moving along and progressing quickly. So I would say, you know, to be on the safe side, mid summer of 2021. Okay. Seems like a roundabout guess.
Yeah, and here's the tough thing. It's not like Barboza ever earned a title shot at 155. So he doesn't have that that one-time title contender shine to him, which you can carry over to another division. And then it's kind of like, oh, he fought for a title once. He gets two wins. That's really, I mean, frankly, how the matchmaker's thinking, how the UFC works. Unfortunately, it shouldn't be that way. He's a contender for a long time, 155, but actually never challenged for the title. So we have to keep that in mind. I can't imagine any scenario where he's closer than two wins away. So it's a little bit hard to answer, because whatever happens, we can kind of figure out maybe, like we said, maybe a Josh Emmett or a Shane Burgos for his next fight. After that, I have no idea what the rest of the featherweight, the top 10 of the featherweight rankings will look like. So it changes the math completely, right? So he's definitely not closer than two fights away. And that might even be generous.
Actually,
we got some big fights coming up too.
Yeah,
we got Bryce Mitchell, who's ranked number 15. He's fighting Andre Feely on Halloween. Mm. Bryce Mitchell wins. You know the UFC's pushing that guy. You got Ryan Hall at number 13.
No. Edson Barboza ain't crazy. He wants fights he can win, bro. So let's just
there's Burgos, there's Ige, who already fought. Jeremy Stevens and Arnold Allen are about to fight.
Yep.
Emmett is, I mean, maybe Emmett. I think Emmett's the guy, but no. I know he's not gonna want to wait that long to fight. He wants to get right back in there. So I think they end up with the Sodiq fight, or they do the Burgos fight, because I think anything above that at this point, with how competitive this division is, especially in that top six range, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So I think the answer to this question is, John, I'm sorry if you're a Barboza fan, I don't think there is a lot the UFC can do, frankly, to help him right now get a title shot, other than, again, just kind of give him entertaining matchups, hope he wins them, and strings together maybe three straight wins gets it. But again, it really depends how the rest of the division shakes out.
And I mean, the answer is keeping him active. That's the answer.
Yeah. Or what did we say at the beginning? Always Yousef. Keep winning.
Yeah.
What did we say?
Just
win all your fights.
Yeah, just don't ever lose, and you get there.
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't work for Aljamain Sterling or Tony Ferguson or a number of other people, but you know,
just win, bro. But I think Yousef is the fight, and unless he's injured or got the Rona or something, if it's really just a passport issue, throw him at the Apex. We're good.
Yep, that's the one.
I totally forgot about Yousef. Actually, I just he won, and he just kind of. I don't know. I just haven't heard his name out there at all for a while.
Casey, while you're looking for another question, I just say I want to apologize to everyone who pays attention to our other shows. I'm sure no one who watches this show watches our other stuff. I was very heavily pushing, I think I wasn't the only one, heavily pushing sort of Stephanie Egger as a potential upset candidate to beat Tracy Cortez. I still feel like Cortez being a near 2-1 favorite was a little crazy. I still feel like Egger's actually a pretty decent fighter. I know Cortez did a great job today. Egger did not look good in there in her UFC debut. That's fine. Anyone seeing her for the first time is like, oh, she's a can, whatever, she didn't deserve. I think that's very, very unfair. I always encourage people to not gamble on MMA. So if you put any money on Stephanie Egger because of me, I do not take responsibility for that. But I do apologize for maybe lying, not misleading America. Okay, maybe perhaps misleading America a little bit as to Egger's chances. But I do think Cortez, I think, was a little too heavily favored. But she backed that up. Whatever was the motivation behind these oddsmakers being so high on her, she backed it up. Grappling looked great today. Looked like a legitimate prospect. I think she'll be even better when she drops down. I think the plan is to drop down to 125. So Cortez, one to watch. Again, far away from contendership, but I think she has the right attitude, and I think she's said herself she wants to fight her way up. So certainly one to watch, and I think that's someone a lot of fans are already kind of taking a shine to.
I thought she looked good tonight against her level of competition. I thought I picked Egger to win and Eggers to win. And Cortez pleasantly surprised me.
I kind of want to see her stay at 35, at least for a little while. Like, one, just because of the times we're in. Yeah. And two, that division needs a boost.
It's does true.
Does it not? 35?
Yeah, there's probably more winnable fights in that division for her. So there's no reason to leave right away. Like, I don't think they're going to throw anything crazy yet.
Just a weird twist, not a twist of fate, but just how things turn out to be now. Now, it was always the women's flyweight division, which is kind of this forgotten division. But now we're like, oh, what about we forgot about bantamweights? Yeah.
Well, some of the bantamweights left and went to flyweight. That probably changed things. But I know there's another question coming up, but while we were talking about Barbosa, one thing, name we didn't bring up, and which Jose Youngs had brought up before, I think in the preview shows, is Giga Chikadze. That's obviously a fight Barbosa would not want to take right now. It's not something he would see as pushing closer to a shot, but they both won today. Chikadze now 4-0 in the UFC. Chikadze still looking for that signature moment. I thought he looked great tonight, but I think people still want to see that finish. That's 4 decision wins. For Chikadze, which does not light Dana White's non-existent hair on fire, unfortunately. So I think if you want to see, and I'm not saying a fight with Barbosa would necessarily guarantee a knockout either. They're both so technical, you might just get, again, a really entertaining 3-round fight. But I would be so down for that fight. If Barbosa was okay for it, I would love to see it. It does not get him closer to a title shot, but it certainly has to be considered. Chikadze and Barbosa, just thinking about it, very exciting.
That was a great win, because I thought Omar Morales was gonna piece him up.
Yeah, he was tough though. Omar's tough.
Yeah, Omar's huge.
He was walking through
featherweight.
He's big. Yeah, he looks huge.
But great. The one betting line that I thought was like ridiculous was the first fight.
With Lavrov. Yeah.
I'm like -500.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you watching this? I mean, yeah, he won, but I mean, like, if you watch his fights, like, he's good, but he's not a -500 good against a guy like Bruno Silva, who looked like pretty good in that fight too. Like, it was not a -500 performance, but nothing against him. It was just, I just thought the line was redonk.
It was odd. Yeah. It was odd. Yeah.
Yeah. It was odd. What do we got? Did I see next week?
I think people are already moving on.
Well, next week yeah, is just fair. When we looked at this slate of Fight Island events, it was obviously the two pay-per-views and then this fight. I mean, this is Jose Young's dream fight. Like, the fact that he's on Fight Island and this is like a week away, he must be so nervous right now.
I saw the news briefly, but Henner and Gracie?
Yes.
So yeah,
he will not be there.
Asymptomatic, or is he sick, or he just got the Rona and he can't come?
Sounds like it. Yeah, that sounds like all we know so far. Yeah.
Okay. I'm assuming Ortega is good to go though, because I'm assuming they train together. So cross your fingers.
I'm the ultimate optimist. I don't believe in jinxes. So of course I've been saying like forever, like, this fight's happening. Jose keeps telling me to stop and shut the hell up, but I don't care. The other thing he says, I just say it more because I believe in the power of positive thinking. It has not always worked out in MMA because I've also been on the Khabib-Tony train for the longest time, which I still think will happen. but I'm very confident this fight will happen. Not as confident as I would normally be because of the age that we're working in now with COVID-19 testing. It wouldn't shock me at all if any of the fighters, who knows, you know, somehow during all this travel and all this testing, unfortunately tested positive. Fingers crossed. I hope this doesn't. I don't wish this upon anybody. I have to temper my optimism a little bit. There's just things that are out of their control at this point, right? So that fight looks great. I mean, I'm obviously my quick pick. I'm actually going to go zombie only because I interviewed Ortega and I'm a jinx. Not that I believe in that sort of thing.
Whatever you just said, don't listen to it.
Yeah, just completely contradicted everything I just said.
It's a great fight. It's a great matchup. I'm going zombie too. I think the odds makers have it right. Right now they have Korean Zombie at -175, Ortega at +150. I think that's pretty spot on. So that's a fun – I mean, it's just a fun card overall. Some interesting matchups. Ciryl Gane, the co-main event. Wow.
That's a great main card. I love the main card now.
Jessica Andrade.
Flyweight debut.
Jessica Andrade can create some wrinkles in that division if she beats Caitlin Chookagian, because Cynthia Calvillo and Lauren Murphy are fighting the week after that. And most people would agree that the winner of that fight would probably be next to fight the winner of Valentina Shevchenko versus Jennifer Maia. But what if Jessica Andrade goes out there and finishes Caitlin Chookagian? That could mess things up a little bit.
Oh, if Andrade whoops up on Caitlin, I would not be shocked if she gets the next title shot. I think it actually makes sense depending on how she looks. But if she can actually put a whooping on Chookagian, I would be okay if a title shot. You know, after Shevchenko Maia, I think.
I mean, if I'm Calvillo or Murphy, I'm pissed if that's the case. But I think they're big. They're both huge Caitlin Chookagian fans.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, you have the former champ aspect of it. I mean, it's a lot. Jessica Andrade has a lot going for her. She just has to win.
That's a good card, man. Almeida versus Jonathan Martinez is a fun fight.
Oh, I mean, Almeida and Casey Kinney didn't get made? What happened to Casey Kinney? Did he get booked?
Casey Kenny's fighting Nathaniel Wood on October 24th.
Catch weight bout,
man. All right.
Krut Bukauskas, the matchup that I didn't even know I wanted until I saw it, and I was like, yeah.
That's a great fight.
That's just Bukauskas. Hells yeah.
Gamrot. Silk versus Kraus is a good one. I spoke with James Kraus on...
Oh, yeah.
Thursday, so you'll see that on What the Heck. Very interesting stuff from the James Krause. I think that's the most I've ever heard him speak in an interview out of all the times I've spoken to him. There's some interesting things that happen behind the scenes that you'll get to hear about. Jillian Robertson's back. Saeed Nurmagomedov on the card. I mean, it's
top prospect. Gamrot making his debut. Holy crap! A guy who I've dragged a little bit in the past for his complete lack of a ground game, John Phillips. But they matched him up with Jun Yong Park, which should have no grappling at all, and we'll probably see someone knocked out in the first 35 seconds. So I'm giving my preemptive ranking for this card, by the way, just looking at it without having done any deep dive into sort of the matchups. This looks like a potential 9. This is a potential 9. If it lives up to, and I'm probably, again, now I need, my whole scale is messed up. I'm probably going too low because this looks like a lot of. Malarkey. We didn't even mention J.M. Malarkey. Malarkey's a brawler. This is good.
I thought you were saying your score was Malarkey, I was going to say.
I mean, obviously that's also true, but this card looks good.
It's a fun one. Leading right into the pay-per-view. All right, what else?
Got one more question for tonight's card.
One
more question for tonight's card. We're going to wrap it up.
Tristan Gournette's getting a lot of play, I feel like.
Yeah,
man. Thank you, Tristan. He writes good. They're quality questions.
Thank you, Tristan. With Chris Daukaus winning tonight, using his speed and great technical striking, what do you think of him in the heavyweight division, and who do you think he should fight next?
This is easy to answer. I don't think anything of him in the heavyweight division because he should drop down to light heavyweight. He weighed in at 227 pounds. I think his first fight, he was, 241?
Yes. Roundabout.
I don't know the exact dimensions of Chris Daukaus. This sounds to me like someone who's trying to make a move down to 205 pounds. So I don't see anything. Is he tall? Is he like super tall?
He's in his 30s, I believe. So, I mean, I think he just dropped some lbs to, you know, for his own health, and safety, you know, trying
227?
To be a little light on his feet. But
I think 38 pounds.
I think Tom Aspinall laid it out perfectly. He said, I want to fight Sergey Spivak, or as he said, I want to fight low-key Chris Daukaus. Like I said earlier, this was the kind of card where we can match make fighters that competed on this card against each other, and they all make sense. I think Dacus versus Aspinall is a good fight. Like, I think it's a good fight.
I think Aspinall's a lot bigger. This is what I'm saying. I think Dacus needs to get out of the... Dacus, I guess he's not small. I'm probably looking at that way too much. I get it. You know, it's just, not... I know.
45 seconds.
I know. He is tall. He's 6'3". He's pretty tall. If he can make 205, I say go for it. I think he's making a move. This is what... This rapid weight loss is what he's making.
Wow. I guess Pooch. Yeah, Pooch. Disagrees with you.
Yeah. No, that was a bark of that was a bark of acknowledgement. Whoa.
I would say or you could do like Dacus versus like the loser of Maurice Greene versus Greg Hardy.
Yeah. I think we got to get Dacus on what the heck. I think we need to make this appearance happen. I think we got to answer some questions about the incredible shrinking Chris Dacus. I think Mike Heck needs to get the answers for this. Every Thursday, people tune in. Every Thursday, you never know who's going to show up.
Or if we lose power and have to do shit.
But I don't think he's staying at heavyweight. So Tristan, that is my answer to your question. I do agree with the speed and great technical striking. But heavyweight, I don't know. 205, I think 205.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, if he can get there healthy, why the hell not? But I think he looked – I mean, we talked about this a lot at the weigh-ins. So we're like, holy crap, Nascimento's made championship weight fighting this 227-pound guy. And, man, just Doc has looked great.
I'm a big advocate for extreme weight cutting. You guys know that. So I want to see these fighters as drained as much as possible stepping into fight night. I want to see them stepping into the scale looking skeletal. That is what I'm all about. I'm just that kind of person. All right, it makes me laugh.
Who's Greg Hardy fighting next?
Greg Hardy's fighting Maurice Greene.
Maurice Greene. Wait, is that fight? Oh God,
that's Halloween.
That's a suitable Halloween fight. When I think Halloween MMA, I would say yes, Maurice Greene. And
I think Dacus is at the point in the that's a horrible idea. Him going to 205. First of all, I love the idea. I want him to go to 207. I want him just to be 1 pound above the limit. And then I want him to be the smallest heavyweight in the UFC. And now I want him to whoop up on fat 265ers. That's what I want.
You like this.
That's what I want. That's his story. That's his gimmick. And he had a great walkout song.
You could drop down. Look, Jared Cannonier was a heavyweight once. Remember that? Remember when Jared Cannonier was a heavyweight? He's considerably shorter than Chris Dacus.
Well, He doesn't have crystal power. We know that, so.
Oh my gosh. I swear if you interview him, Mike, and he brings up crystals and says like, yeah, I've got these weight loss crystals here. They really help me keep the pounds off. Really help me control my cravings. I will not watch that episode. I'll tell you right now. I will tell people not to watch that episode.
What a bold threat.
Wow. Twitter needs to put up one of those. This tweet contains false information warnings.
Okay. Twitter violation. Happen?
Yeah, I'm going to flag that video, that clip, which I'm sure you'll clip off, Casey, if Dacus says that he's using.
We'll just run it on Facebook then.
Oh, my gosh.
Or you could do Dacus versus like Chase Sherman. That's fun.
Yeah, that's Chase, man. He had a great fight. Yeah, where has he been? Yeah. Get back in there, Chase. I miss you.
Chase Sherman is our break glass in case of emergency heavyweight. There's like so many guys who've like debuted or there's like second or third UFC where like, yeah, Chase Sherman is the next logical test for them.
I mean, this is a different Chase Sherman from his first UFC run because if we're going back to the first UFC run, Chase Sherman would have fought four times already against in like ridiculous fights that made no sense, which he knew. He admitted that he did that, but he's on a different wavelength these days. Do you have anything else, or?
Nah, I'm ready to call it a night.
Yes, this is like 3 hours earlier than last week.
Yes, that's great. We normally air we're normally on at like 1:32 in the morning. So let's not force people to stick around till that time.
I think we talked about this card enough.
Yeah. Yes. It's a good one.
It was a really good one.
How about that? How about that Buckley knockout?
Unreal.
I don't think anyone's talking about that, Casey. I don't know what Buckley knockout. I think I would have heard of that if people were talking about it.
I don't know. I saw it mentioned on social media. That's all.
That finish is one of the reasons why we still do this stuff. You know what I mean? It's like I love that. We love MMA. We love the daily grind of it. We love, you know, we love this conscious decisions. We love competitive fights. We love all that stuff. Every now and then, though, there's magic. You know what I mean? There's a magic moment, which unfortunately comes at the expense of another fighter. But there's that magic moment that you know you're going to end up talking about for, again, the rest of, who knows, forever, until as long as we're watching MMA, as long as MMA's around, we're going to be talking about that knockout. And that happened tonight. And it really, I was just thinking about it for the rest of the night. I think a lot of people were. And thank goodness the rest of the card, there was so much action after that, like, lived up to that moment as well. So, yeah, it's left me feeling all warm and fuzzy, which doesn't always happen, I think, when we're covering this sport. But tonight definitely did.
There you go. I mean, we had Chimaev in the first fight, Allen Tripp emerge as a star, and now Joaquin Buckley could be the next one. So we'll see what happens.
Chimaev Buckley.
Yeah, Chimaev versus Buckley. There you go.
Easy.
Easy peasy.
All right, I'm going to start playing
that. The next one canceled for this week. But no, I'm just kidding. AK and I will be back on Monday morning doing On to the Next One. Between the Links, we will record that on Monday as well. Brian Kelleher versus Phoenix Carnevale for the strap. Very excited. The match has been 3 weeks in the making. It's finally going to happen. So I'm very excited for that. And then lots of cool stuff going on throughout the week as we get you ready for Ortega versus the Korean Zombie next Saturday. And then, of course, all hell's going to break loose. UFC 254 the following week. Habib versus Justin Gaethje. And by the way, what is with the spelling of Gaethje's name?
On the post.
On the corner of the post. That was outlandish.
I thought it was fake for a second.
Was it a typo? What happened?
I didn't know. Real bad.
Could not have spelled Gaethje's name worse.
On the cage?
In cage advertisers on the post. Every time the camera like saw it every time that they spoke by that. G-A-E-J-T-H-E. So gate, like, I mean, I guess down to the way I can sort of understand why, but come on, people. This is your job to do these things right. So, no, right. Jessica Crystal Crew. No.
They couldn't have spelled it worse. They spelled it G-A-E-J-T-H-E.
Yes, G-A-E. So, again, maybe you'd pronounce it the same way, but people, we are better than this. We got to have standards. Mike, I know you're going to sign us up, but I always like to say on my part, thank you everyone who's watching. You guys are, I love everyone who's watching live, anyone who's watching the replay in the coming days as well. You guys are the best. Don't use crystals.
Can you wrap us out, AK?
What rhymes with crystals? Yo, don't pistols. Use crystals. Yeah, I was going to say, don't use crystals. You'll end up on the wrong end of a pistol. I swear I'd never do that again. I'm so sorry. We can edit that out later. I apologize for everyone who saw that live. That will not be in the final. We'll edit that out. We'll edit that out of the final.
I apologize to all 800 viewers.
Right, yeah, now. I'm sorry, guys.
Earth to cool Alex. Earth to cool Alex. I don't know what the timestamp is, but clip.
No, and cut. Yeah, clip it and cut it out. Yeah, and don't show it to anyone.
Yes, that'll be up there with views with Joaquin Buckley's knockout by yes. Tomorrow morning. So, So thank you all very much for watching, listening. Whether it's live or after the fact, we appreciate it very much. UFC Fight Island 5 in the books. For Alex K. Lee, for E. Casey Lydon, I am Mike Heck. Thank you very much. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.